to Open House with Team Reba.
Welcome back to Open House with Team Reba. I'm Reba Haas of Team Reba, RE/MAX Metro East Side. And my usual co-host, as I said earlier, is on vacation or just having returned from vacation. He's probably needing a vacation from his vacation. But anyhow, I am here in the studio with Sean Martin of the Rental Housing Association, who's currently their interim executive director. And he's also been involved quite a bit with all the government affairs programs and everything else. We've known him for several years, and we appreciate you being back on the show again with us. Thanks
sure.
so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, okay. All right. So I'm going to move you back around here so we're on Facebook land. All right. So before we went on the break, you were talking about like the criminal records stuff,
yeah.
right? And we were asking, is it going to maybe go statewide? And you were mentioning there's some federal stuff involved. And I get where all that's coming from, because I do realize people of color have been definitely much more impacted by the way our laws and how the criminal justice system has been. So I'm definitely behind leveling the playing field.
Second chance, yeah.
Yeah, I 100%. Absolutely 100% behind that. And I always like to talk about the fact that, you know, I was, you know, I'm going to turn 50 this year. And I always like to say that, you know, hey, I was born the year of fair housing, and I'm very proud of that. And I'm glad I grew up in that kind of environment,
yeah.
right? You know, it's and 'cause here's the thing. That kind of stuff is still happening all the time. My first two customers I ever had when I got in this industry faced discrimination. And we got one of them not so much by a seller, but by an escrow company. Mm. And we got them fired.
Wow.
Yeah, we found out there was a couple people in that office who were treating some people pretty badly. And they were pretty much out the door, because we found out there had been other complaints, and we pushed that issue. And then my second client, it was really, he has a name that sounds like an English name, but for him it's not. And it was an older person who had a property since 1926 in the Ballard area. And when they discovered that this person wasn't of the same kind of heritage, they didn't want to sell the house to him. And here we were in contract.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so I pushed that and finally got the other agent to admit it. And so
wow.
I knew that that's what it was for. And so, like, when you were talking about, you know, Office of Civil Rights, I had to threaten them a lawsuit too, because you get free legal help
oh, yeah.
in those situations.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm a big proponent of fair housing, and I'm not shy about it. So 100% second chance, do it. Absolutely. But when it does get into the place of, you know, I'm also a landlord, and there's risk factors that, you know, if I have someone staying in a unit in a multiplex with children, and I find out there's a registered sex offender who's harmed children, I'm going to want to know that.
Yeah.
Right. Because we have Megan's Law on the residential resale side of things, where it says sellers don't have to tell you if there's a registered sex offender nearby. But it is about protection. You know, I mean, if I'm a landlord and I knowingly put somebody in that situation, I'm also opening myself up for risk now.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm so torn about these things.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we had, with the federal HUD guidelines that were in place prior to Seattle passing law, and again, this is Seattle only where they've been banned, but the federal HUD guidelines were really that was exactly what they were getting to, the mm-hmm. theory, the legal theory behind what the Supreme Court has called disparate impact.
Yeah.
Which is, at face value, it may not be intended in any way to be discriminatory or have an additional burden on someone who may be of a particular race or, you know, gender or whatever. But it's a policy that could, you know, impact someone
right.
negatively. So they'd say, you know, disparate impact. So is it fair to have a policy that says no criminal records allowed entirely in my screening? Well, that would probably negatively impact, you know, racial minorities a lot more than, you know, a white person. And that's really kind of where this came down from, was that having just a blanket ban was considered a disparate impact. So we get into,
right.
you know, as mentioned, the business decision where you really got to prove, okay, this presents some kind of actual danger to your person, property,
right.
other tenants.
Right.
Not that you just are a little worried because someone had something come up. And
right.
so we felt that, you know, that's a good middle ground. We thought that was pretty fair. And actually, you know, the city, when we're going through this legislative process, it was looking like that was going to be kind of weighed still, and we'd have a 2-year window and anything after that, because data, if you look at, you know, after about 3 years, is kind of the short term. But usually after about 3 years, if someone hasn't reoffended,
right,
they're not any more likely to offend than anyone who's never been convicted. And so we'd say, okay, well, let's walk to the data. Let the data guide us, not, you know, our emotions or we want to seek retribution or fear, you know, and all of that. And unfortunately, what we've arrived at was driven by a lot of that, which was just a very emotionally based argument that we should just not use any criminal records at all. And so, you know, regardless of if someone has committed arson, you know, that person has to have a place to live. But is it appropriate for them to live in a 100-unit apartment?
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. And we're not mitigating the risk for landlords at all. The city has no skin in the game in this whatsoever.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest frustration, is that we're not getting equal buy-in. It's all being pushed onto the
private sector.
I wonder
if it will turn into a requirement, like if there's any kind of a suit that happens out of one of these situations, if it will require the city to do some form of indemnification and or insurance policy.
Well, there's a funny you should mention that. I don't know if you're thinking of the same lawsuit, if you've seen this, but in Chicago last year, there was a company that did not do a screening for criminal records.
Oh, no, I did not see this.
Which is what, you know, this policy would say, great, you're not doing a screening for criminal records. That's good, because you're going to help someone out. And the person that they brought in ended up killing a tenant that lived in the property.
Oh, my gosh.
And that tenant's family is now suing that property management company for not screening them. And so that's where we're starting to wade into this stuff. And okay, are we now liable? And indemnification from the city would be great. They don't think that there's a need for it for some reason, mostly because I don't think they want to solve the problem. I think they just want to say,
well, I think
we passed this law and look at the great stuff we're doing. But
well, I guess the cost of umbrella insurance probably just went up
as soon as we
had that discussion. Because that's one of the things is most of the people I know that start buying rental properties, maybe they haven't been introduced to the idea. I mean, because there's a lot of people, whether they're new to this country or they've been here a long time, people, as you said earlier, use property as a form of long-term retirement. Like maybe they don't like doing the stock market, but they feel like they understand property. And many
tangible
people,
asset.
Yeah, exactly. And something they can fix up and handle and whatever. And I can tell you, like, umbrella insurance doesn't really kick in, and you can't really get it until you have about $1 million worth of assets. Well, if a person's got a $250,000 house, maybe they don't have umbrella insurance coverage. And now they're going to be put in this situation where, you know, that's not going to be covered on a typical hazard policy, right?
Yep.
I mean, there's so many. Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to get a hold of my insurance guys and bring them back on the show.
Yeah, that'd be a great. It could spend a lot of time on this one, yeah.
So
this is another one that is being looked at. Will there be a legal challenge? You know, I don't know. We've looked at this. We look at everything that's passed by any city, really, just to say, okay, does this fit within the parameter of what cities are allowed to do? And this is getting that same look. Just the other day on Monday, City Council passed a ban on these rental bidding platform websites.
Oh.
Anyway, so bidwell.com with two Ds and rentberry.com.
Yeah.
Those in, you know, 27 days or so, kind of get counting down from the law passing, those will be banned, so we won't be able to use those. And the theory there was, you know, we had basically UW students came out and said, you know, student body took a vote and said, we think these should be illegal because we fear that they will drive up the cost of our housing because people will be able to bid. It won't be kind of this one-on-one experience. It's open up to everyone in the world to bid, and it might drive our rents up beyond what we can afford, you know, around the UW. And so this was taken to council, and they said, yeah, you know, we're concerned about this too. We're also concerned about how does this do these platforms interact with rules like first in time and move-in fee caps and all that.
Yeah, you've hit another hot button of mine, because that's one of the things that, you know, one of my issues with all these like unicorn apps and stuff that come out of Silicon Valley is that they're guys just sitting in one place on the planet who have no idea. I mean, this is why tech firms got into real estate, most of them came in with the attitude that I walked away from when I used to work in tech, which was like, oh, we're smarter than everyone else in the room and we can do everything better. And even, you know, Glenn Kelman, the head of Redfin, finally, after 10, 15 years, came out and said, he's like, okay, I was wrong. You know, because he came in with this attitude. And I was like, you were going to get slapped around. And I'm one of the people that helped get him slapped around, because they kept doing all these illegal activities. And I would turn him in left and right wherever I would find it. Because the thing I talk about all the time is, you know, in fact, so I just did a video earlier today. It's on YouTube right now, where I'm talking about agency law, you know, and what that means for buyers and sellers within Washington state. And we don't have fiduciary duties here, but we do have four different areas of law that affect real estate, and they're agency law, common law, tort law, and good business practices laws. And this is a highly regulated industry. And people forget that. They just think, oh, it's just a house.
Yep.
That is highly regulated in how it is sold, purchased, financed. There's so much how it's rented, like even more so now because it's local, state, county, federal. It's so many layers. Yep. Like they pretend government doesn't exist. It's in some weird utopia, but maybe they should get together with Shwarma over there and talk about some utopian life.
Yeah,
because it doesn't exist.
Yeah, no, that's 100% right. It's a little in a way, this is frustrating for us because we are here locally in the arena fighting the good fight for rental owners and investors, and then you have a kind of this faceless, from Silicon Valley. We're just going to create this thing. And it's like,
it's a great app. We just made $1 billion.
Yeah, and you've just caused me a headache because now I got to go down and lobby and figure out how it's impacting. Yeah.